First person to my left is Gary Smiley, the raising man. Gary. Todd Frank. Sandy Smiley. Andy Polycop. Alan Fromm. His sister Gloria Fromm Goldberg. And Ben Stout. So, first thing we're going to do, we're going to start with Gary. We're going to have them introduce themselves, say who they are, where they were born here, where they moved here, and when, who their parents are, and what their initial relationship was with Temple, but they are very good start.
Gary Smiley, born here in 1936. I left to go to college in 54, UNC. And then, let's see, what did I do there? Went to dental school. Finished there, went with Uncle Sam in the Air Force.
Yay!
Homestead Air Force Base, got a beautiful assignment there. Came back to orthodontics, finished my orthodontics, taught at UNC for 10 years. Did some basic research in cleft palate. Moved back to Spartanburg in 75, and I'm here today above ground. My parents, Sam Hetlin, who started the first temple, and he had three daughters and one son. Simon Hetlin, you saw, basketball player, and we have two of his kids here today. Where are you guys? Oh, they moved. Where are they? Karen and Robin. They're brothers, the Yazians. They both live in Nashville, Tennessee. Their brother, who is also a dentist, he couldn't make it here today. And then we have my mother's sister, Alice Hecklin, and these two characters right here, Glenda and Rick, came. We have three children. I've forgotten our... oldest daughter, Karen, and Mark Panoski, live in Charleston. All you Charleston folks know them, I'm sure. One sister, Sarah, was never married, and my mother was Rose, married Harry Smiley, who moved from Nashville, Tennessee here, worked at the Aldo W. Smith Company. He was the advertising manager in the men's department, boys department, toy department, and many other things at Colin Smith Company. And then what else you want?
Who's your wife?
Where's your wife? She's right here. I'm
sorry. Yeah, she'll say a lot for you.
Well, my name is Dr. Frank. I'm Jewish by choice. I was born one of eight children out near where the airport is. I picked peaches on the first runway. I still have five brothers and sisters living, which I'm very fortunate. Wow. They live nearby, three or Greenville. Anyway, I married Marvin Frank in 1950, and it was my choice to become Jewish because I wanted our family to be one religion. And we were fortunate enough to have two great children. My daughter is here today. My son is in Puerto Rico. And this community has been, I just can't tell you what it has meant to me and my family all these many, many years. And I love each and every one. And I remember so many of my friends who are no longer here, and because I think I'm probably the oldest member of the temple, and not by age, but by membership. And I'm very but anyway, I just love each and every one of this community.
We love you.
I'm going to make one quick comment. This lady was younger. She was a real knockout.
I'm saying you smiling. This is my husband, who you already heard from. I am not a native of Spartanburg, but I've been here 44 years, so I think that might count for something. I'm from Eastern North Carolina, and my dad had a clothing store, as many dads did. And when Gary and I got married, Rabbi Stauber, who was already the rabbi here, came to Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, and married us. He was also the rabbi when our girls had their bat mitzvah. So we go back a while. When the children were growing up, we have a son too, but he had his bar mitzvah in Chapel Hill. But when the girls were growing up at Stu, they were very active in BBYO. We even had a convention here, which is amazing, because we didn't have that many young people. But the kids went to conventions all over the Carolinas and Georgia, and they met so many nice Jewish kids. And one of the best things that happened is many years later, after college and so on, one of our daughters met a friend who she had known in BBYO, and they are here today. It's been, 28 years they've been married, so we feel blessed. Anyway, anything else you want? That enough? I'll give Andy a turn.
Hi, I'm Andy Kolikoff, and 1950 must have been a big year because Dot said she was born in 1950, she was married in 1950, I was born in 1950. She only looks a couple years older. Anyway, my parents were already here when I got here. My dad came here in 1941. He had grown up in Blackville, where his father had a store down there. And after he finished law school, he came up here to Spartanburg and opened a law practice. And my mother was from Baltimore, moved to Miami, and then they met, and she came up here. I was born in 50. I was the oldest of four children. My brother Gary is here today, and he still lives in Spartanburg, as I do. And we've got two sisters. I'm going to mention this because a lot of y'all, I'm seeing people that knew us as we grew up. One sister, Brene, is down in Atlanta. She still plays music. And the other sister, Faye, is her family is up in Baltimore. And that's ironic, as she never thought she'd end up in Baltimore after my mother left there and then comes here and then Faye ends up there. So I don't know how that goes. But at any rate, as I said, I grew up here. Were you asking us about our earliest memories?
Not yet.
Don't want to get to that. Okay. So anyway, grew up here. I've basically been here almost all my life. I went away to school for several years and traveled around for a few years. And about 35 years ago, I came back for good and been here ever since. And that kind of kept
it. Talk about your father, Andy.
Your father and mother.
Tell us about him.
You want to talk about Dad?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, interesting.
A little
louder. I want to tell you how, I hinted at that a little bit.
My collection like this?
Yeah. Okay, all right. My dad grew up in Blackville, and as I said, his dad had a store there. And, really how we came here, you have to go back to his father. And our story is pretty typical of Jewish people in South Carolina. And what that is that when my dad's father, Sam Kolikoff, He was born in Russia, and in the very earliest part of the 20th century, when he was about 14 or 15 years old, he escaped, and actually they were pulling him into the army, and if you know about the way the army worked back then in Russia, they would put the Jewish people on the front lines, and you were pretty certain to get killed. And a lot of people in his group that got pulled into the conscripted at that time escaped, and he came through Europe, came to America through Ellis Island, and came down to South Carolina, really because there was a Polycarp of a previous generation who was already established in Augusta, Georgia, as a rabbi in Augusta, Georgia. So he came down, really had nothing, and you know, at a young age didn't really have much education. And so as a lot of these Jewish people coming in, he was a peddler. That was how you made your money. And you worked your way up. Once you had a little money, you bought a horse. You had a little more money, you bought a car. And when you got a little more money, you might get a store and you find a little town in South Carolina. And so he had been in the southern or the lower part of South Carolina because of this Augusta connection. And he came up to Blackville and opened a store. So my dad grew up there, went to undergrad and law school in Carolina. And he knew he liked the mountains. And so after he graduated from law school, and this was 1941, he got on a bus. He just knew he wanted to be somewhere near the mountains. Rode the bus into Greenville, walked around Greenville for about an hour and a half, and said, "This ain't it." Gets back on the bus and comes over to Spartanburg. And he ran into an old classmate. The classmate said, "You know, you might apply with Jenks Thompson. He's this lawyer that he might be open to hiring you. He's got kind of a relaxed, laid-back kind of practice." And so my dad went to see Jenks Thompson, and Jenks said, okay, let's get us a dozen eggs and we'll talk about it. Well, a dozen eggs in 1940s language meant a bottle of booze. So they drank a dozen eggs, and that's how my dad got it. Established his law practice in Spartanburg, and basically we've had our law practice going ever since. As I said, my brother is up the street from me, and we've just continued on with that. My dad, you know, I want to say this. I think Spartanburg has been very welcoming to Jewish people, and I think my dad is a pretty good example of that, because here he was, this Jewish guy, not even from Spartanburg, and in 1944, I believe it was, he ran for the House of Representatives. He was elected 7 times to the House of Representatives, had at one time the record for the percentage of votes of being elected for that office, and so in the late 40s and in through the 50s, he represented Spartanburg County in the House of Representatives. So always, in that time, he was always very popular and never had any problems. I mean, it was as I said, I think we felt Spartanburg was very welcoming to us.
My name is Alan Fromm, and I grew up in the big city of Union. I'm what you call a country Jew. Spartanburg was a big city to us. And Union, well, not so much. There were 2 Jewish families there, my dad and then his brother. And my dad was Harry Fromm from Union, South Carolina. And my mother was a Yankee. She was born in the Bronx, ended up making her way to Asheville, North Carolina, and they met on a blind date, of course, through a traveling salesman who called on my father in Union, who lived in Asheville. So that's what happened there. My family got to Union in the 1890s, probably around 1895. There was a family called the Berlins who were related to us. They got there, and then the Fromms came, I think, around 1901. And then there was a Fram, who was a brother to the Fromm. There were friends, Frams, and Fromms. They were all related. Three of them stayed in Worcester, Mass. a friend and a friend and a from and a friend ended up in Union. It is the way it goes. My Aunt Rosa Polycoff, who is Ed's mother, has indicated, which I didn't know until Aunt Rosa told me, that the first Torah that the Spartanburg Temple received was from my grandfather, Israel Fromm. So we don't know if the Torah is back there or not. I may sneak a look later on, Rabbi, to see if I can find it. But, you know, you get into talking about Southern Jews, and I'm looking up here, and Gary and Sandy, their great-grandchild is a cousin to my girls on the other. And then Polycoff over here, we share cousins, and I don't know about you, I don't think so. There's nothing. Although I felt like Rabbi Salver and Phyllis were my family too, just like everybody in here who had anything to do with them felt that way as well. So it's a pleasure for me to be here. You know, I love this part of the world. I was in Union yesterday, got to see some friends. Like I said, my sister and I, there were about 1,100 or 1,200 students at Union High School. We were the only two Jews. And honest to goodness, as a lot of folks up here will tell you, and Sandy's probably the same way in Williamston, North Carolina. There were two, and we just got along beautifully. And I think that says a lot about the communities we grew up in.
Well, I'm Gloria Fromm Goldberg, Alan's sister, so you know the history already. And
hold the mic.
Okay.
Even closer.
A little closer? Not very close. Excuse me. But what I remember, all I know is growing up in this community was a wonderful thing to grow up and be involved with the Spartanburg Jewish community. Our parents would get up on Sunday morning and drive here, and they would meet with other families, the Bernstein family, the Bernanke family, my family from Woodruff, the Reimers, and they would wait 2 hours and go somewhere and have coffee and make sure that we went to Sunday school every Sunday. It was that important to them. They wanted us to make sure that we knew what we were, that we were Jewish, even though we were not involved in the Jewish community, obviously, in Union, there was not one. And on Wednesdays or whatever, my mother didn't drive, she was from New York. My dad would get a high school student to drive us to Hebrew school and wait in the car for us. And so both my brother and I, when we were time to go to college, we were told we would go to a school that would have a large Jewish community. There's no doubt of that. But the Spartanburg community has been very good to us, and growing up in Union, maybe it made us realize that we were different a little bit. I don't know, but Alan has a history.
Ben Stalbert, and I know that's for the Stalbert name, not the Ben name. So. I was born in Bayshore, Long Island, New York. And, one day, I came home from school, and my sister was crying. And I said, "What's the matter?" She says, "We're moving to South Carolina." And I said, "What's a South Carolina?" I was like 7 years old or something. And there was no big TV back then. So, sure enough, my father had come down here because some friends of his that we knew from Patchogue and Bayshore and all that, they settled here before he did, opened a very nice New York style bakery, quality bakery. And the folks in Spartanburg were blown away. They just munched up that bread and cakes and all that. And I remember every now and then they ran a picture of High Price, who was the husband of the pair who opened it up, and Rose Price was the other one. And but they were artists, they really were. And I settled in, and just, you know, it's like going to another country when you come from New York to South Carolina. This was 1955, that when we were. And so the first day of school, third grade, I walked in and the teacher announced who I was and where I came from, and "You're a Yankee." And I said, "No, I'm a Dodger." What did I know about the Civil War? We never talked about anything above Virginia. We didn't talk about the Civil War until I got here. So I learned quickly, though. But, you know, people said, wasn't it hard on you? You know, did they pick on you? Did they call your names? I said, they picked on everybody. It didn't matter what you had. They could figure it out. If you were chubby, they called you fatso. If they, you know, whatever your weak spot was, the kids found it. Kids are very cruel. You know, they really are. But then I found a small group at first, and then it got larger about learning how friends would be curious about our lifestyle, our religion, and all that. And, you know, they say we're at the buckle of the Bible Belt, and I take that as true because they are started at a very early age to learn about their religion. And my father being a rabbi, it was like having God's assistant in the house all the time. So I have to be very careful, which I wasn't all the time. And I really, really enjoyed it. We had, my friends would come over and share Saturday, especially Shabbos lunch with us. And then at the holidays, Passover and all the others. And they had these little books. I imagine you had them growing up, the Birkat books, little white pamphlets. And it was transliterated, and it was the brachas after the meal. You know, we prayed before, blessing the bread and the wine, and then afterwards, after we got stuffed, we said the brachas. And before I knew it, they were singing along with us. And I thought, okay. And then I met this very strange guy, and he married a lady from China, and they had a son. And one Passover, the son read the four questions. And so it was a very strange American white father, a Chinese mother, and brachas from the child of the two. And that is the melting pot. And I still have it as a friend this day. We don't always agree on everything, but he let his son grow up the way he should have been, without too much, you know, negative parts. But when Alan was talking about the, like, I don't remember how specifically, but, you know, the uncles and aunts, all my relatives were either in New York, Florida, or California. And I wanted family. So that was no problem because the men and women in this town rose to it, and they were Uncle Hi, Aunt Rose, they were Aunt Fluffy, as we called her, and everybody was either as a cousin or as an aunt and uncle, and it was just a wonderful community. And again, as everybody's been so nice to remember my parents the way I saw them, and you just couldn't help but just feel safe and happy around them. There was lots of food, lots and lots of food. My mother said, eat some more. no, you know, we'll put it in your pocket, you know, take it home or all that. But it was really, really a wonderful time. And it did prepare me, as said earlier, that we are different. And my father always said that to me, we're a people apart. But that didn't mean a negative people apart. It meant that we had a very strong culture, lasted over thousands of years and is still there, and that we should appreciate it. And we did, we did. And I was invited out of high school in the middle of it. So my father thought there was an alternative education for me. Found a military school that would accept me. First rabbi's son that went to Georgia Military College. Graduating with honors, though. You know. And learned a lot of good lessons there also. So the best part was I met my wife-to-be down there. And we met each other. I think she was 15 and I was 16. And all through the years,
You're messing up the pro, you know, you're messing up the recording, but you're doing great. Keep going.
I'm a little unsure. But anyway, so we followed each other through the times. I was overseas a long time and we kept in touch. And then one day I realized, well, I better grab this girl before somebody else does. So we got married and we moved back to South Georgia where her family was from, and it was not the same. There was a very nice, small Jewish congregation there, but I don't want to be rude, but nothing to compare to this one, absolutely. And then after 30 years of being away, she came home one day and she says, I'm moving back to Spartanburg, you want to go with me? I said, yeah, I guess so. And we liquidated all of our whatevers and we came back, and I have not regretted it one day. It just stays with your heart. And today was very, very extra special. As I stood in front of the door and all these people I knew at one time or another just kept pouring through the doors, it made my heart skip. It's back. It's like looking at lost sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles, and I wouldn't trade it, like I said. So if you're bored where you live, we would like to have you. It's a nice place. It's a booming economy. We got BMW. We got, anyway. But what were some of the other questions you asked? That's it?
For now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We have one panelist here at Price, Thelma Price. His grandfather was one of the founders of the temple, one of the presidents. He came down from New York, I'll say this very quickly, and was very instrumental in building the first synagogue. That's half of his family. His great grandfather was Moses Price, who lived in Manhattan and Brooklyn. And the other side of the family was the Robinson family. The second president of the Jewish Historical Society was Clyde Robinson, and brothers related to him. I think they're cousins. And the other family that's on that side, Robinson, is the Mann family from Newberry, Joseph Mann. Harry's quite an historian. I hope he comes later. I hope you get to meet him. He's really a fantastic historian. There's a big banner in the social hall of the synagogue. He did that on his own and brought it over a few days ago, I guess. Nobody knew that was coming, but that's what this weekend means to them. So he had that big banner made for a display. Okay. I'm going to tell you one quick story about, they're talking about some of the families knowing each other. This is a quick little story. I don't know if anybody knows this, but the man who was most responsible for getting the synagogue building was the chairman of the building committee. His name is Joseph Spiegel. S-B-I-G-E-L, and he was the chairman, he was president at the time it was built. He had a brother named David. David married a lady named Daisy Mittel, M-I-T-T-L-E, or M-I-T-T-E-L, spelled two ways. She lived in Newberry, and she had a sister named Pauline. She had several sisters. Her parents were Julia and David. Julia and Herman. And her sister Pauline married a man named Moses Epstein. Does anybody know that name? E-P-S-T-I-N. They got married in the 1890s, and then they made their way down to Beaufort. And Moses Epstein was the man behind building the synagogue in Beaufort. I think it's called Beth Israel, if I'm not mistaken. And he was the president, he was the leader of getting that synagogue built. Moses Epstein's father was Philip Epstein. He was the founder, was one of the founders of two synagogues in Columbia. The first synagogue was the Tree of Life, Eitz Chaim. And then when they started, they were an Orthodox synagogue. They later became Reformed. He led a group out, they had a legal battle, and they started a Orthodox synagogue, which became conservative, called Beth Shalom. So we have the Spiegels and the Middles and the Epsteins are interrelated, and they're involved in building four of the synagogues in the state. I don't know if anybody's known that before, but that's something that I found in my research, which is interesting. There's a lot of people back in the 1920s, 1910s, 30s. The families around South Carolina knew each other, they visited each other, they intermarried a lot. It's changed a lot since then. But it's interesting the connections that take place in the past. It's really quite interesting. Next question I'd like to ask everybody, start with Ben, still got the mic, here you got the mic. I'd like you to describe your earliest recollections of being at the temple, going to Sunday school, maybe some event you remember, what it meant to you. Talk about your early life and your early synagogue life, if you would not mind. Ben, you can start in Patchaw. I think that's what you should talk about. Let's talk about your earliest recollections as a child, going to synagogue open service. So,
here or New York?
Well, start in New York.
New York.
You can talk about here too if you'd like.
Yeah, well, it was a very large congregation, 500 or so families or more. We live right next door. And our whole life was wrapped around the temple. And I was very young though, and I thought that was normal. So I just, slid into it. When I came here, it was different because there wasn't such a large community, but what they lacked in numbers, they made up for in love and support and all that. I was thinking as I sat down, I promised somebody I would mention something, and I want to bring it up. I was always curious. I knew how we came down here from New York, and I always wondered, why would people come to Spartanburg from wherever they were and settle here? What drew them to it? And everybody has their own reason and their own desires, but I'm amazed at the folks who grew up here and the successes they had. And even George Dean Johnson, the gentleman that he mentioned earlier about who wants to keep the old temple, pristine. And he didn't have a religious connection except what he felt in his heart. We didn't go over there and lobby him. There was Joe Rex was a refugee from Hungary during the Hungarian Freedom War. And he settled in here and he took up the mantle. And he did so much for this temple. He was president of B'nai B'rith. He was a very active Israel supporter. He just spurred it on, and the people responded to him. Now, people like that, we were so lucky to get him. And not just him, it was Brooke, Kathy Brooke's father, Louis Brooke. They were also refugees, and they had a terrible life. And then they came here, and he started teaching soccer, and he started to organize the soccer leagues and all that. This is before anybody played anything but baseball and basketball. It's just these folks that come in and enrich our lives and the future. And then I guess part of it is now we have a German BMW plant and they feel right at home. And in one of my High Holy Day speeches, I was in a business and I had a partner and his father was an SS sergeant. And I went home and told my dad and he said, well, you know, talk to him, see what his story is. And he said, my father was, that was his unit. He said, he was just a guard in the highway or something, and who knows what the real story is. But he said his father was a poet and all this other stuff. And I knew this young man, and I couldn't believe anybody but a poet would raise him. And so on Yom Kippur, I said, look at what we have today, the son of a rabbi and the son of an SS man, you know, working together, you know, making peace with each other, and it works. And that comes here, and it goes wherever the folks who leave here and set out. I hope they share it too. But I forgot to mention, what's your name again? Alvin? My brother, my older brother, Alvin. My sister, AKA Honey, when I was born, she was 2 years older than me. And then a couple of years later, she was 6 months older than me. A couple of years after that, we became twins. What a miracle. I mean, only in Spartanburg. That's it. Thank you very much.
I remember going to the old synagogue, and I remember sitting next to the back row, and I would sit with Aunt Lena and Uncle Lou and Butch and my brother. And I just remember that I would keep walking outside and my parents would yell at me. So I would go downstairs. There was a basement, if I remember correctly. I remember that. I remember when they moved the Torahs, when they walked with the Torahs. And I remember going to Sunday school in the big white house behind the shul, behind the, where for a couple of years it seemed like we had services over there, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
But what I remember the most, and I don't know if I should say this, is our parents would drive us to Sunday school. Like I said, and they would sit out in the car and wait. And Aunt Lena and Uncle Lou would come, and Butch and Ellie, and the Bernsteins. And everybody was in the schmata business. And I remember Sam Witz of blessed memory, and they would all have clothes in the back of their cars. And they would give them, Daddy needed this, they needed this. And they would swap clothes around, and they'd come to Sunday school. I don't know if that's funny, but. I loved that business, and so I just remember all that. Spartanburg's been good for us. I know that. Rabbi Stallard taught me well. Married me, and he was a wonderful man. Phyllis. There was with us.
My first memory of the temple was at the old temple, and I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and we went to a program downstairs. I was not in Sunday school yet, and I was sitting up towards the front of the room, and they were having programs, and I'm thinking they were calling all these kids up. They're going to call me up, and I'm not going to know anything. I mean, there was Hebrew and this and that. I was lucky to speak English during communion. And I have similar memories of, as Gloria said, students would drive us up to Spartanburg. And I will tell you this, I took a bus every Saturday from Union to Spartanburg. Dr. Julian Spiegel used to pick me up at the bus station and deliver me to services here at the old house, because we were there probably in about 60 or 61, and I would go to services, and I guarantee you, if Rabbi Stauber was alive, he would tell you I was the worst Hebrew student he ever had. But the payoff was, after the service, we would go back to their house, which was behind the house back here, and he would give me a private lesson, and then I would get to eat Phyllis's food, which was, if anybody ever tasted Phyllis's food, she was a magnificent cook. And you know, then we would say the prayers, and I just had such wonderful memories of that. They were just so nice to me, and I was thinking, Julian Spiegel picked me up every Saturday for a couple of years. Now, who would do that? I mean, really, just nice folks. And we didn't know the Spiegels until we sat on the same row with them, the second row from the back on this side. As I recall, the Tannenbaums were up front. What are the Tannenbaums here? And were y'all at the front, Ricky? You weren't. Where were you? Just in this first? Okay. Anyway, it's in my mind. We're not going to let a lie get in the way of a good story anyway.
Mr. Yaffe always stood over there.
Mr. Yaffe, he stood over there. Okay, we had a choir here, right, Ben? Yeah. But the place really kind of looks the same, which is nice and pleasing and pleasant, and just brings back great memories. So I want to pass it on to my almost cousin here.
Going back to my earliest memories of being Jewish in Spartanburg, first off, my earliest memories had more to do with people than buildings. And the most prominent of those people would be Rabbi Stauber, Ben Ted. And that man must have been an expert on the chapter on Job, because he had the patience of Job. I can tell you, I don't know how he put up with the stuff we did, including you. We were worse than that. Especially you. And he loved us. But that man was wonderful. And I remember, you know, from the time I was 6 till 18, he was always here. And then when I would come home from services when I was in college and law school, and he was always here, just as this continuous presence and always a welcoming presence. As to buildings, I want to mention a little bit, as particularly for those of you not from Spartanburg. You're going to be going down to what we call the Dean Street Synagogue, where all of us here first went there before we came over to this building. And that is my first memory, somewhere around 6 years old or so. And it seemed huge at the time. You know, my memory, once we left there, it's almost that it was a huge place. When you go inside there and you see the synagogue, you're going to say, gee, this is pretty small. But as a child, your memory, your perception is a little bit different. We left that building in 1961, and there's a picture somewhere you'll probably see of this procession, where we carried the Torahs, we walked from that building back to over here. We didn't even have this building ready. This building didn't go up until 1963, but we left the other building in 61. We carried the Torahs. There was a big old Victorian house back here. And I kind of have more memories of that than these other places, and that's long gone. And that building is where we had our Hebrew school classes, we had Sunday school classes, we had BDYO meetings, all the community things were in that building. In fact, my bar mitzvah was in that old building that's torn down. My bar mitzvah was in May of 1963, and we actually opened up this synagogue in the fall of 63. So I was the last bar mitzvah in the old building there. At any rate, I've thought about this as two-way history here in Spartanburg and these two synagogues. And it's interesting of the bigger picture of how that happened. The Dean Street Synagogue was built in 1970. And you've heard the history. They started the collection seriously in 1916. But if you go to downtown Spartanburg, and I see this all the time because my office is right on Magnolia Street, so I'm right there in the heart of Magnolia, or the heart of Spartanburg, excuse me, which is Magnolia goes right to it. If you walk around the Morgan Square and you look at the cornerstones on those buildings, most of them are between 1910 and 1920. Spartanburg must have been booming in that period. And here you hear that we built the temple right in the middle of that. So I take it that the Jewish community must have been doing well, at least in regard to what they've been doing in the past, that people were coming in, money was coming in. And so it was a good time, I think, for everybody then. And then as far as this property, and if you walk around out here, you'll see it's a beautiful property. There's several acres out here, and it was actually purchased, I believe Abe Smith purchased it in the late 1950s. And so the property was here, the old house was back there, and eventually, through a lot of work, Joe's dad was part of the leadership at the time that helped make this transition and get into this building that you're in today. Another memory I have, and I have to say it with Ben sitting here, our family, we grew up on more of the west side of Spartanburg until I was about 10 years old, 10 and a half years old. Then we moved way off the east side, which was kind of a new neighborhood. And at that time, lawyers still had to go to court on Saturday morning. And so they wanted us to go to Saturday morning services. And the rabbi, Ben mentioned the house back here, but actually the first house they had was a big old house right on Main Street. I remember that house well. Because my dad, on his way to court, on Saturday mornings, would drop my brother and me off. And we would visit with the rabbi. And Ben was a little bit older than me, but he was old enough to already be a card shark, to the kind of card play I knew. So, you know, Ben, but anyway, that was our entertainment until it was time to go to the temple. And we would walk. The whole group of us, Ben and his dad, and my brother and me and Bonnie, we would walk from that old house to the Dean Street Synagogue. And so that's really my memory of that time. As I said, the transition here was right after my bar mitzvah, and so the rest of our services were right here. And so this is kind of where I grew up too.
Actually, I have no memory of growing up in Spartanburg because I didn't grow up here. I grew up in a small town in eastern North Carolina. We belonged to a temple in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. The temple was 48 miles. No, that's doing it wrong. The temple was 48 miles away, and that's where our parents took us every Sunday for Sunday school, where we went for holidays. And it's been moving to Spartanburg, and having the temple just down the street was a miracle. It was wonderful. Although growing up, even though we had no Jewish kids in my town, by the time my sister and I were probably 12 or 13, we knew all Jewish kids across North Carolina because we attended conventions like BBYO, and it was just these same friendships that carried on with us when we went to college. There were some of the same people who had been there. Coming to Spartanburg, of course, Gary's parents were here, and they were very welcoming, very glad to have their son come home. But the first memory I have of coming here, it was the first weekend we lived in Spartanburg. We were invited to a wedding, and we thought that was the loveliest gesture in the world. Everyone here was so welcoming and continued to be through all the years that we've been here. So we're glad to be in Spartanburg, and I thank all of you for being such a kind, welcoming group. I have to say also, that next door, sitting next to me, is the most wonderful friend I have in Spartanburg.
Doc, if you would, since you converted to the religion, would you tell us, if you wouldn't mind, might be too personal, what that was like? What it was like converting here, and who the rabbi was when you converted?
I was planning to do just that. I was going to say, my memories of being Jewish start much later than the rest of you, because I said it was only in 1950. But anyway, here I was a little naive nurse in nurse's training, and this group of boys would come out for playing bowling and sit on the nurse's home lawn with us, and that's how I met Martin. He was a wonderful bowler. He had been asked to turn pro. But anyway, we started dating, and it was getting serious. But being of two different religions, we realized that it was a problem. So we decided to call things off. So I guess it was a couple of weeks or so that we did that day. And his mother later told me that she got so tired of seeing him mope around that she said, if you want her that bad, go on out there and get her. He came out, I was on night duty. I can remember seeing him come down the hall at 1:30 in the morning. And my heart melted. And from then on, it was the two of us. But anyway, we did marry, and as I said, I did not want to have children and with two religions. So it was my idea to become one religion. Rabbi Rubel, we contacted him and started studying with him, and I think I'm the first convert in Spartanburg. From what I understand, no one else seemed to know about one. And I studied with him for a year and converted. We have the same anniversary date because we married by Justice of the Peace first, and then was married by Rabbi Rubel in the temple. But I converted on a Sunday, and the wedding immediately followed that. The other memories that I'm so proud of is when Rabbi Stafford came. The year before he came, we had five little boys. Rabbi Stafford was a Moor. We all had to get a Moor from Atlanta for our boys. The year Rabbi Stafford came, we had five little girls. And we used to kid him that he'd been a teach for the boys in our family. Another memory that I have, and you spoke of this, of the friendship, the closeness of you growing up with my children. Thelma Yaffe was my best friend at the time. She had just moved back. And our children were so close that I said, there's no way I'm going to let my daughter called Thelma Mrs. Young. So Thelma and I got together and we said, they're going to be aunts. You're going to be Thelma, I'm going to be aunt. Gladys. So that's where the aunts and uncles, and to this day, I'm an aunt to a lot of you, and I'm delighted. But anyway, I said, as far as being the conversion part, it was just a matter of studying and following whatever instructions Rabbi Rubel had me do at the time. Anyway, when we go to the old temple, that said it had very fond memories because I was married there on the Sunday afternoon.
Really know where to start here. My memories, I was not a nice person. I might still not be a nice person. But But for me to go to Sunday school, for me to take time to learn Hebrew and get ready for my mitzvah, took away my playtime. I like football, track, and it was Rabbi Rubel that had to put up with me. And Mother kept kosher. She was very, very religious. My dad would sneak out and get a shrimp or two every once in a while. My mother wouldn't have any part of that. But she was pretty hard on me. And my dad had what's called a Wilcox Day record player, and it would cut records if you wanted to hear something. They didn't have tapes in those days. It would cut the music on there. And he had a cousin in Nashville, Tennessee, and in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and all three of them had these records. They did not write letters. They would cut a record and mail it to each other. Well, I was so bad trying to learn Hebrew and all, I still have the records today of my bar mitzvah. Mother would make me sit down and spend an hour, not every day, but it felt like almost every day, and listen to my bar mitzvah to learn it, which I finally did. And most people, like, when you read, you can look down and look up and look down and look up and read your speech. I couldn't do that. So I had to memorize three pages of my bar mitzvah speech. And it just took a toll on me. I didn't do what I wanted to do. In fact, there was a lady called, some of you may be old enough to remember, I've lost her name now. But she was WSPA Channel 7. And my dad got me with her to learn how to do a speech. But I finally got my bar mitzvah with Rabbi Rubel, and I guess I'm fortunate to have done that. And then Ben's dad came 2 years after my bar mitzvah. And like Sandy said, he married us, and very fond of him. I have great memories of Rabbi Rubel, Stauber. And that's...
That's great.
Well, it's not.
And all of you talked about the nice experiences you had, and I had similar experiences myself. Did any of you have any prejudice or anti-Semitism? If you would tell us what it was like or what you saw, maybe all of you did, but if you could just pass the mic around and talk about that.
I don't remember any of my friends. I never heard anything from them at all like that. And what bothered me was during Christmas time, and they're all singing Christmas songs, and I'm sitting there, you know, I couldn't do that. There was just no way. That bothered me some, basically, in school. But I don't remember any anti-Semitism at all. I'm sure it was there, but they did it. It was behind my back. I had good buddies at the time.
I have never experienced any whatsoever. And being with my family, who we're still so very, very close and everything, and with Martin being a different religion when we married, they accepted him right away. My dad was concerned more for me at the time. He said, I don't know of any Jewish family where they did not, that worked out. Said the Jewish family seemed to, they ignored or just forgot. In other words, I forgot the term that they used anyway. You were dead to them. If you married out of the religion. He had heard that, and he was concerned about me. But they loved Marvin just like a son, and we've had a wonderful, wonderful 54 years of marriage, loved by my family as well.
I remember no episodes of anti-Semitism. My uncle's family and our family were the only Jewish families in Williamston, and it was never a problem. They had closed the store for the Jewish holidays. We were just accepted as being Jewish. So we never had any problem, or no overt problems anyway, with anti-Semitism. It was, I think we were lucky. I hope maybe we learned from some of our non-Jewish friends, and maybe they learned a little from us.
In speaking of whether there was anti-Semitism, if there was, I think it was mostly below the surface. I didn't really encounter very much at all. And as I mentioned earlier, in the late 40s and all through the 50s, my dad was getting elected to the legislature, and everybody knew he was Jewish. They didn't have any problem voting for him. And as I said, in the 50s, his totals were record numbers for that kind of an office. So, you know, I think that says a lot for Spartanburg County, that that somebody in politics at that time did not have any kind of problem at all with that. One thing I wanted to mention that sort of ties into that, and I wanted to say this earlier when I was talking about this building, and I mentioned that when we built the first synagogue, Spartanburg seemed to be booming, but I noticed at the time that we moved in 1961, by that point, you probably heard of this fellow named Andrew Tesler. And the Teslers had come down here and they started Bubnit. And when they came in with Bubnit, they brought a lot of Jewish people. There was probably the biggest influx at one time of Jewish people into this area. And I believe that was around 1960, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with the congregation deciding the old synagogue was just too small and we needed a bigger place. And so, you're talking about early 1960s, everybody in town knew that all those families that were associated with Bubnit were Jewish that were coming in here. And as far as I'm aware, I think all of them were very welcomed into the community. And Andrew Tesler, you'll probably hear more about him today, I think he was a reputable person. Everybody knew about him, and a very well-respected person, he and Senator Tesler, in this town.
We really experienced hardly any anti-Semitism in Union. Certainly, I think occasionally somebody might make an anti-Semitic remark. That may have been two or three times in my life growing up. Occasionally you'd hear the term Jew them down. Very rare. The community, quite frankly, was just wonderful to us. I say this, Gloria and I went to Union High, and it probably had between 1,000 and 1,200 students. And I was elected president student body my senior year. And I figured, you know, if there was a lot of anti-Semitism, I would have heard about it. I would have seen it. And I just didn't see it. We celebrated Christmas holidays with our Protestant friends, and they celebrated Jewish holidays with us. And we would swap Christmas and Hanukkah presents. And I belong to MYF, for those of you who don't know, Methodist Youth Fellowship, Presbyterian Youth Fellowship, went to Presbyterian Kindergarten, belonged to an Episcopalian Boy Scout troop. I get it all. I mean, that's what you did in these small towns. And people, I think, really respected you for who you were, not what you were. And I, you know, I growing up in a small place, you have that situation. People live together, they see each other, you go to school together, and they say, Alan, or Alvin, you're just a person who happens to be Jewish. Nothing different. than I am. So I'm glad I had that experience growing up.
Well, like I said, I always loved going on Main Street in Union. My dad had a clothing store there, and I loved going there, and I would hang out there all the time. And I do remember every Saturday that the Klan would march, and that they would have the pointed hats, and that their faces were covered. And I was scared. No matter where I was on Main Street, I would go run back to the store to be with Daddy. And he would take me in the window, in the same story you probably read. I would say, "Daddy, I'm scared." And he would say, "Those people are not going to hurt you, Gloria." And I'd say, "How do you know?" And he would say, "They all buy shoes for me. I know exactly." And so, I remember that like yesterday. And I think somebody told me that my grandfather used to say that, the Israel from, and say the same thing. So. And I do remember that, but growing up in Union was good. Like Alan said, I went to a Presbyterian. I went to the Presbyterian church when I was 4 years old at kindergarten, and I got to be the angel of the Christmas tree because I had a lot of fun. I remember that. But I had a teacher one time tell me he was going to fail me if I missed for Yom Kippur, and my dad was there the next morning and got him straight. And but it was good growing up there. I mean, it was fun. I mean, I was had a lot of friends, and I still keep up with quite a few.
Boy, tell them that's Bobby.
No, that's Alan's story. Alan has a lot of stories.
Well, as I said earlier, when you're young and your friends find out that you're soft on an area, they just dig in. But, you know, I was talking to my older sister, Naomi, before I came here, and she's sorry she's missing it, but we were talking about when we walked from the Dean Street Temple back to the house that was on East Main Street, 1.2 miles. We did that measurement over and over again to just tell my parents, "Oh, it's 1.2 miles together." So I said that, you know, they would come down from various organizations and ask us questions about our religion, and we just didn't respond in any way except, you know, maybe with humor or "no, thank you" and all that. But what I remember mostly is that my older brother, Alvin, he was the lead in the Christmas play 2 or 3 years. First he was the poor newspaper boy, and he can't remember that one, but the one I remember is when, that was the one with the Christmas tree, and then he had a big, beautiful Christmas tree, and his line was, "Wow, I never had a Christmas tree before." We thought that was just so funny because it was so true. And, you know, to be picked out of all the people in the school, they picked the rabbi's son. So it shows his talent. You know, they deserved it. But I had to say, I was in Vietnam, and it was Christmas time, and I guess the USO had all these Christmas trees cut and delivered to the various units. And my commander said, "Ben, if you're not doing anything, go in the blah blah room and grab us a tree." I said, "What?" And I said, "Yeah, just grab us a Christmas tree, make sure it's full and nice." And I said, "Oh yeah, I've had a lot of experience with that." So I came back, and this thing looked like, I don't know, an emaciated dog or something, like this. And he looked at me, and I said, "What'd you expect? I don't know what I'm doing." But they, you know, they still decorated it, and they weren't mad at me, and Christmas went on. But it wasn't that hurtful if they said something, you know, irritating. I just ignored it. And I get back to my sister, I said, it was like, in our home, our parents gave us like a metal shield around us. And if people said something really bad, it just bounced off because we knew we had the really right messages in our hearts. And so, yeah, you get through it, but they're going to find something and they're going to say something. But I didn't really have much anti-Semitism. It was just wiseacres and trying to get my goat. So anyway, still like it here.
Joe, when I say, where's Joe?
You say whatever you like.
Okay. One thing I'd like to bring up, and I'm sure this is the experience of a lot of people here, particularly many of you who had retail businesses and dealt with the general public. I can tell you, my grandfather and my parents were not leaders of the civil rights movement. They weren't, you know, and how many people really were at that time? Very few. But the one thing I can say is that we were brought up to be respectful of all people. At that time, obviously, the people who were more discriminated against than anyone were the African Americans. And my parents, there was no slang words used in our house. They forbid it. It was just not something that happened. And when people came in the store, if they were of the age, they were all Mr. or Mrs., never a first name. My father looked at me and he said, son, he said, we're all the same. He said, and then he looked at me, he's only, my dad would say, he would say, money is not black or white, it's green. And he was right. And I can remember a story when we closed the store in Union back in 2005, an elderly African-American gentleman came in and said, I want to tell you something about your grandfather, who I never knew. He died in 1934, I believe. He was 56 years old. He said he was the first merchant on Main Street to allow African-Americans to try shoes on. And I said, what do you mean? I don't remember that. I remember separate bathrooms, separate water fountains, African-Americans at the back of the bus or the train or whatever, those sorts of things, separate schools. But I'd never heard that. And I said, well, let me ask you something. How did you buy shoes? And he said, we would take a string and we'd measure our foot. And then we'd go to the store and we'd say, we want a shoe that long. And I'm thinking, you know, I never knew my grandfather, but I'm thinking, hey, this guy from Lithuania, who came to Union County in 1901, and opened, you know, it was a peddler, the horse, the wagon, opened the store around 1904. That said a lot about him. And he made me feel really good about my grandparents. And then my father and his brother were the first two merchants on Main Street to hire African Americans to wait on anybody, you know, not just other African Americans. And so it was kind of interesting, the president of the NAACP in Union, who was about the same age as my father, came in to see him one day and he said, Harry, we really need to hire some African Americans on Main Street. And he says, I know you're Jewish, and I know you're scared, and I don't want to put any pressure on you. And he kept talking about, Harry, I know you're scared, you're taking a risk. He knew my father very well. So he looked, his name was Mr. Elmore Free. So my father looked at Mr. Free and said, nobody's going to tell me what to do. And Mr. Free knew my father would react that way, and of course he ended up hiring some people. But I think we need to talk about those things. I mean, we look back and I think as Southerners, many of us are Southerners, that's really, as we look back at a hard time in our life, and we still think about those kinds of things. But there are a lot of people, especially the Southern Jews, who did show respect. I'm sure we could have done more, but we did show respect. And I was thankful I was brought up in a house like that, and I'm sure all of you were as well. And I give credit to my parents and our ancestors and our grandparents who were in South Carolina and other places in the South who did treat people with respect. So I just wanted to bring that in as well.
I just want to echo what you said. My father was the first to hire African-American employees who also waited on whites, African-Americans, Chinese, whoever came in, but they always did. The other thing I remember, in high school, there was a black school, there was a white school. The black school had a library, which was pathetic. The white school's library was something to be proud of. I'm proud of my mother because she and a friend helped to integrate the libraries at that time, which was almost unheard of in our part of the world. So I throw that in.
Just one quick comment. My first year in the dental school in 65, I needed to get off to go to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We would go with Glenda's mother and go to Greensboro. And I went down to the Dean Brower. I need to get off of the High Holy Days now. And he said, no, you can't do that. He said, if I let you do that, I'd have to let Dave Dobson, who is chairman of prosthetics, go fishing for 2 or 3 days.
You thought that was equivalent?
We've only got 2 or 3 minutes left. Does anybody have a question they would like to ask the panel? Does anybody in the panel like to ask a question of each other?
I'll just say one thing. My mother passed away when she was really young. She was 48 years old, and we were the only Jewish family in the Union. And I was remember at that age that every night a group of men from Spartanburg would come to Union. They would drive to Union with the rabbi so that we could have a minyan and say kaddish. And I will never, ever forget that. That how thankful we were because we could not have done that.
But one panel, as I mentioned earlier here in Project, I'm here today, had conflict that came up. While I've got your attention, please remember we would like everybody when you come outside the building, do not leave. We want to get a group picture on the steps. We want a second group picture of all the people who grew up in Spartanburg together so we can keep that forever. And also tonight, the back 4 or 5 tables, 6 tables, we're going to reserve as a reunion table so those are coming back. And then we're going to get together as the meal starts and do a couple things together to try to remember the past a little bit. So those of you coming back, look at the back tables. There'll be some reservation cards over there. And remember the pictures in Senegal. We're going to go there in just a few minutes.